Welcome to Workforce 2030, brought to you by Silk Road, a global leader in strategic onboarding for workforce readiness and transformation. Silk Road helps organizations deliver personalized employee journeys that engage talent and help companies meet their future strategies. Each episode on our podcast, host Alexandra Levitt, human capital futurist and international best-selling author of Humanity Works, talks to leading experts that are contemplating the workforce of the future. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alexandra Levitt, business and workplace author, speaker, consultant, and futurist, and the host of Workforce 2030. Today, I'm here with Jennifer Fondrevet, founder and chief humanity officer of Day One Ready, a consultancy focused on the human capital aspect of mergers and acquisitions, or M&A. Jennifer works with forward-thinking business leaders, owners, and executives to pre-plan their people strategy through the phases of M&A so their employees can contribute from day one. During this episode, we'll be speaking on the topic of mergers and acquisitions in the context of the future of work and how things are evolving and changing. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's so good to see you again, and I understand I'm going to be seeing you in November in England.
Yes, you shall. We're going to hobnob it in London.
And what are we doing there?
Well, Thinkers 50. I'm crashing it. You're being acknowledged. I think it'll be a great time. I hope to be a future Thinkers 50.
I hope that you will be, too. Well, we're going to be talking about some of your forward-thinking ideas, and, you know, we'll send it to the folks over there. So we'll have, like, a little piece.
I'll start my campaigning now. I think it's a good good way to approach it, right? Crash the party.
And yeah. Well, it's going to be a good party, from what I understand. And I know we have a mutual friend, Dori Clark, so it'll be great to see her as well. All right. So M&A, you know, this is a topic that we have traditionally not talked a lot about, but it makes a tremendous amount of sense to be focusing on it when we think about the speed at which companies are going to be changing, growing, switching around, consolidating.
Yes.
Do you think that this is something that is going to be happening more often and pertain to more types of organizations?
I do. It's astonishing to me the numbers that you see consistently related to M&A. The fact that just even in the last 5 years, we've been over $3.5 trillion globally in M&A deals done. And this is big companies, small to medium-sized businesses. So I expect that that's going to continue. Forecasting shows that it will. And more companies are having a hard time surviving on their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And certain people are doing future-oriented work better, and so they're more able to be successful. Yet there are certain other organizations that have critical expertise that want to be taken in. So I think it definitely does have increasing relevance. And so when you look at the past of M&A, like, what would you say has been the most effective way to do it? And we're talking, I guess, from a talent management workforce perspective. Like, what are some best practices historically that you've seen?
Well, I would say I'm glad you highlight that there are best practices. I think M&A has gotten a bad rap, frankly, understandably. I've gone through 3 multi-billion-dollar ones. They didn't play out as they should have, or I'm sure that the leadership had wanted. And you've got, unfortunately, the press is focused more on the epic failures, right? Everything from Quaker and Snapple, AOL, Time Warner, United and Continental. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they play out publicly, you see the downside. But I do think that there are best practices, and in particular, in the small mid-market scope of business, you've got companies that have the opportunity to grow and survive, frankly, through a merger or an acquisition. Private equity, I think, also gets a bad rap, but they can provide that cash infusion. As well as a third-party objective view that can really help leaders be smarter about how to survive. You know, that's one of the areas where I work on a lot is with business owners and executives who, frankly, are so tied into the day-to-day requirements that they can't see the forest for the trees.
Right.
And, you know, that's particularly, you know, in the things that that you highlight, right, when technology is transforming so much of how business does, if you're focused just on the trees and not the forest, you're going to have a hard time as a business moving forward. So I do think the opportunity for mergers and acquisitions to have an upside is there. You just have to be smart about the people piece. And that's what I really focus on.
And what are some of the things you recommend to your clients that they do when they're considering the people piece? Or has it changed? Has what you recommended in the past, does that still apply now? Or what are some of the shifts that you're seeing? So I guess there's sort of two questions. What have you seen be successful before? And then how do you think that's shifting given some of these future of work trends that we're seeing?
I think in the past, and you know, my lens is through both experiencing acquisitions as an executive, but now my lens is through seeing them from the other side, helping business owners. And I have seen that the tendency, whether you're an executive or small to mid-sized business owner, you'll call your lawyer, you'll call your accountant, right? Those are the standard advisors that you reach out to. But you don't call out to I'm not sure how crazy I am about the term, but you don't call out to a human capital advisor, someone who can give you visibility on the people challenges that you'll face. And, you know, and big corporations, oftentimes the HR or marketing don't have a seat at the table during the M&A deal discussions. So they don't have a voice and a way to contribute. And then in the small mid-market arena, they often don't have HR or marketing legitimately contributing at the level that they'd be part of the deal discussion. So for me, the shift that I've seen, it's slow. I'm trying to move it forward. But the shift is an acknowledgement that it's people who are critical to the success of this deal. And we've got to be smarter about how to plan for that aspect of it. And so I say when you're reaching out to your legal and accounting and considering the finances, equally consider the people piece and reach out to a human capital advisor to be smarter about how you plan and to really define your strategy much earlier in the process.
Jennifer, do you have any examples of where this went horribly wrong? You don't have to name the company, but a company that just really didn't think about the people piece at all, and that was the reason for the downfall.
Well, you know, and I don't want to name companies because I think, frankly, it's an example that's happened consistently. The for the book that I have written on it's a survivor's handbook, essentially, for how to survive M&A. And I wanted to your question exactly, make sure it wasn't just my philosophy on what makes things work or not. And I interviewed probably about 50 executives. And consistently, what they came back with, right, lessons learned, meaning it didn't go the way they had hoped, was by having focused so much on the transaction and the financials and the forecast without anticipating the people challenges, they were blindsided a bit by the complexity of people not rallying immediately behind the vision, not understanding the direction of where the company was going and why. And in particular, that's a big part of the not just my book, but my overall message is working with executives so that they can have an ability to see these are all the scenarios that can play out based on my research, based on the interviews that I did. These are not unexpected people challenges. So there's not one that I can pinpoint specifically. I'd say there were a number of executives who reinforced time and time again that was the component that they hadn't anticipated was going to be the greatest issue and one that if they had to do it all over again, they would have paid more attention to.
Right. And it seems like so obvious that obviously there are going to be culture clashes and people who don't like the direction and you have to roll it out a little bit at a time and make sure people understand how their role fits into the big picture. What is the – you would think that that would be a core part of the communication strategy, but you're saying that,
No, and you know, one thing I highlight too, nobody goes into an M&A deal, you know, expecting it to fail. It's just that – because people have said, well, you know, it's the fault of private equity or investment bankers. I don't put blame on any one group at all. For me, it's the fact that they're focused on the transaction for a reason. So I just say you need another voice and another perspective that adds to your intelligence up front. Because if you don't, then, you know, that's why I call it day one ready. day one isn't the day you make the announcement. Day one is the day you consider M&A as a growth strategy. Mm-hmm. From that moment, you've got to start thinking about your people and what the strategy is. And, you know, I feel like sometimes the canary in the coal mine, but I'm starting to see that that message is resonating and there's a shift happening that for me is thrilling because I think it'll give M&A deals a greater chance for success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. And I don't know, for the benefit of our audience, can you tell us the title of your book and where we can get it?
It's called Now What? Okay. I feel like I'm doing my plug.
That's okay. I asked for it. I asked.
It's Now What? Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Acquisition. Okay. It comes out in September.
Okay, great.
So I'll give everyone an opportunity to pre-order. Mm-hmm. What I highlight is it's a satirical business book in that because most people, you know, they look at me when I say I'm the author of a book on M&A and they yawn. And
so I think it's fascinating.
It's illustrated. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, it's illustrated. What kind of illustrations?
I bring to life the archetypes that emerge during a merger and acquisition, the people, right? One of the things I reinforce because it's a survivor's handbook is you're going to have new bosses that come over. Everything has changed. Right. Despite you maybe hearing repeatedly nothing's changed, it has. Yep. It changed the moment that your company considered M&A. And so I highlight not only will you have new bosses you have to prove yourself to, but your colleagues will change.
Right.
And again, not to pass judgment, but they will – everyone operates differently, reacts differently to change and transition. Mm-hmm. And you're all typically operating from a position of fear because no one knows what's going to happen next. Sure. Oftentimes. That's why the communications piece is so key. So I highlight that you just need to be prepared that people around you are now going to act differently. Mm-hmm. That was one of my greatest lessons learned in the three scenarios that I went through post-acquisition, and it was eye-opening. And again, it's not to pass judgment. It's more just to make people smart about what to expect and then how to navigate through that.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. And I think just having an overall sense of what you need to do from a psychological standpoint and considering that that's important. Well, I love the mention that you made about illustrations because this goes back to a theme that we talk about on this podcast, which is the need to still have creativity and craftsmanship associated with what you would really think is a utilitarian issue. So mergers and acquisitions, it's here's what you do, here's what you don't do, but you have infused the human element into the information that you're providing. So you couldn't just have a machine do that. Like who's going to decide on these illustrations? You did, Jennifer. So I love that, I love that you did that and that it was a great example of what we're trying to illustrate here.
And you're right.
Literally, sorry, the illustration. What a great pun.
It does bring to life the human element. I did it because I was worried no one's going to read this book if they think, oh, Survivor's Guide through M&A. This is probably for deal makers. And I wanted to highlight, oh, there's a human component.
Yeah.
That's what the book is about.
That's what it's
and
about.
And so— the illustrations just help people understand, oh, you know, I have everything from the know-it-all to the Black Widow. There's just different personalities, and it gives you a chance to understand
your
and that's fellow human beings.
Your unique human take on that.
Exactly.
So you're a human helping us understand other humans, and this is going to be the kind of thing that continues to be important.
Yes.
There would be no way for a machine to take that function over from you completely in exactly your way. So great work. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about, of course, we always have to bring up automation and consolidation. Given some of the future work trends that we're seeing, so we've got increased contract work, we've got artificial intelligence. How do you see the world of M&A and specifically the people piece changing? Are there going to be new things that we need to consider with our talent management strategies given a company's propensity to want to automate more, to want to infuse more artificial intelligence, and to want to consolidate operations so that they're more efficient and more cost-effective?
Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, I would say I really agree with what you highlight in your book, Humanity Works, right? That while robots are coming, AI is coming, or frankly, as you point out, it's here. It's the people who are the heart of a thriving enterprise. Mm-hmm. And it's the people who will make the company successful. Mm-hmm. And so that remains true in particular in an M&A scenario because it's often the complexity of integrating processes and synergies that may not be realized. That's the issue. So if you don't have people helping you to think through that and bring that together, you know, you will have ideally not a failure, but you will certainly delay the success of your M&A. But I, you know, I'd love to hear your take on it, because I think there's so much that you touch on in your book. There's a lot of different applications to to M&A, but where you see automation in particular helping companies.
Well, I think the use of data is one thing that could potentially help out a lot in an M&A. So, and I think it's challenging, because really what you need is two companies who have individually understood what their workforce looks like. So who's working for them? In what capacity? Is it a part-time? Is it a full-time? What skills do those people have? And this is something that sounds really basic, but most companies have no idea what skills they have available at their disposal. And having a knowledge management system that really tracks where your labor is in the world, what format in which they're working, what functions are they performing, what skills do they have, what skills do they need to develop. And if each individual company had that, you could very easily use data to integrate the two and determine where are there massive redundancies, because I know that's a problem with M&A. What happens when we have a bunch of people doing the same job?
Right.
And where do we need to fill in with external talent, or where do we need to hire more people? And what's going to be the talent mix that's going to give us the greatest chance of success in this particular configuration?
Right.
And I think data has the ability to do the predictive analytics. Many different forms of data analytics have the ability to do this, but the problem is you have to not only have the data, I think a lot of companies have it, but it's coming from a variety of disparate sources. It's not being integrated in any effective fashion. And sometimes data might disagree, one system might disagree with another system. And so what you really need to have happen is you need to have a mature software piece behind it, but you need to have, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, you need to have explainers. You need to have people who are versed in human capital who can say, our data is saying this about our workforce, and here's what this means from the lens of our merger that's coming, or our acquisition that's coming. What are we trying to do with this merger and acquisition from a talent management perspective? And here's how the data supports that. I think that role is not being filled in many cases. So the data might exist, but it's not being used for any good. So it's one of those things, just like 20 years ago, we had video conferencing, and the technology was there, and nobody used it.
Yeah, I remember those days. No one adapted it because it never worked very well.
Right. And so this is one of those areas where predictive analytics can do a lot of this now. I'm sure it could make M&A far more strategic and far easier. But it's a matter of having that data and knowing how to leverage it. And both parties have to be doing it if you're really going to maximize it.
That's the key. And, you know, it's interesting. One area that I think people would be surprised is an opportunity to use data in M&A scenarios is in the culture integration. I think a lot of times what I've seen, again, through my research is culture tends to be an afterthought.
Yes.
Right? And we'll get to that. They'll integrate. And I think now, just as you highlighted, through predictive analytics, you've got a much better picture of how a company operates, what their culture is, what are their tendencies, how do they make decisions, are they more marketing driven or product driven, how, you know, a more entrepreneurial or more hierarchical. And I think thanks to that data, the culture integration piece can be optimized, because you're using that data to help you think through, okay, can these cultures integrate well or not, or what are going to be some of our pain points? And so, just as you highlighted, the predictive analytics and the data and the need for the two companies to come together. What excites me is that culture piece where people have, you know, I don't want to be dismissive, but it's kind of, it's a touchy-feely. I can't wrap my hands around it. I can't explain it. I just know it when I see it. I think data can actually be a greater force for good in that area.
I agree with you. I mean, even if it's just a matter of, and I'm curious as to how you think data could be used, but for me, I'm imagining just collecting sentiment. So collecting data on emails that are being sent, like what words people are using.
Absolutely.
And you can get a sense of the culture. I mean, right now we do have culture assessments And generally, a company has to go out of their way to take a culture assessment, and then they can get a vendor or consultant to narrow it down for them and lay it out. And obviously, in an M&A scenario, that would be effective if you have each one. But you don't even necessarily have to do that. If you've already been collecting this data, you could even do it yourself.
And, you know, you bring up a really good point, too, the sentiment piece of it. Mm-hmm. The nature of M&A is things become cloaked in secrecy.
Yeah.
It's the unfortunate nature. So it's mm-hmm. it's just the reality, mm-hmm. either for legal reasons mm-hmm. or, frankly, people just don't know what's going to happen next. And because of that, people become afraid to ask questions. Mm-hmm. You know, when they have a ton of questions, but they aren't sure who to ask, who to trust. It's just mm-hmm. it creates a scenario where it becomes difficult. And so, you know, when you were talking earlier about communications, mm-hmm. oftentimes, because people are afraid to ask questions, to your point, mm-hmm. gauging that sentiment, being able to collect that from people can give you a picture of what are really on the minds of your workforce. How are they feeling? Where do we need to be addressing things? Because mm-hmm. it may not be coming up naturally.
Yeah.
And that can be an issue because, you know, the tendency post M&A deal is productivity drops through the floor.
Yes.
And a big part of that is morale drops because people don't know what's going on. So the faster you can get a clear picture of what's happening in the company and how it's being embraced or not by your workforce, it's another great area for data to be your ally.
Yeah, no, that's great. And understanding or having people understand what does it mean for them mm-hmm. and like you're collecting this data and have people trust in the data and that it's not – because I can see data collection as being kind of a frightening thing in and of itself.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're collecting data on sentiment or what you're saying or what you're feeling. Like, no, we're doing this to make a more effective overall outcome for all of us. So communicating about your collection of the data. The other thing that I want to ask you about is I see M&A, and I want your feedback on this, as being an opportunity, a scary opportunity for the combined organization to then say, well, this is great. Now we can just lay off all these people mm-hmm. and automate everything or automate more than we were before because we have this new organization and change is afoot and we must be prepared for the future of work. How do you recommend these organizations really take a step back and think about what's the right way to approach automation? So from a human capital perspective, what should we be looking at when we discuss or when we think about what we automate and what we don't? What are some of the more critical considerations there?
So first, your scenario of mm-hmm. the potential that companies come together mm-hmm. and they go towards complete automation, mm-hmm. That could be a possibility. I love mm-hmm. the fact in your book you highlight that you know, automation is good for certain areas,
right.
but human beings have such a critical role in the success of a company.
Right.
And so to think through what are the aspects that you can automate to mm-hmm. reduce, absolutely, M&A, mm-hmm. a big part of mm-hmm. the growth strategy is to eliminate redundancies. Mm-hmm. Companies come together, they can mm-hmm. get rid of that. But then the opportunity is, mm-hmm. how do I allow my workforce to contribute to the future
right.
success of the company. So you highlighted before, let's say that even the data that mm-hmm. I collect for sentiment mm-hmm. and the opportunity to gauge where the organization is feeling, collecting that data is one thing, but understanding that and then rolling out a plan that actually helps your employees do their job better because you've defined mm-hmm. where the issues are, where the challenges are through the collection of that data. It's human beings that will do that analysis mm-hmm. and be able to then create the go-forward plan
right.
to optimize the, you know, the possibility of the workforce continuing to do their job. So, mm-hmm. you know, I love the fact that you painted out. It doesn't have to be an adversarial relationship between humans and mm-hmm. and AI or computers mm-hmm. or robots or however you want to define it. You know, our success will be in our agility to adapt and evolve our relationship and partnership with technology. Mm-hmm. And so for me, actually, companies, you know, the message that you have in your book, Humanity Works, messages like mine that mm-hmm. will reinforce the mm-hmm. human aspect, I think helps bring that to the forefront mm-hmm. so that companies aren't automatically thinking, oh, this is great. I'm just going to get rid of all these jobs. Right?
Right.
I'm just going to focus purely on the operational efficiencies. You know, a perfect example I think that we're seeing is Kraft Heinz.
Mm-hmm.
right? They're here in our own backyard.
Yes, they
here
are.
In Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me as someone who was in advertising. They focused so much on the cost cutting and mm-hmm. the operational efficiencies.
Yes.
And didn't really focus on the innovation and the brand and the things that people mm-hmm. bring to a company's success. So I'm excited to see that they actually have a chief marketing officer.
Yeah, that's
who's
a
taken
start.
Over as CEO. But you know, that's one example. And I think there's an acknowledgement that people will be critical. The automation should relieve them of mundane tasks so that they can contribute to the company in a bigger way.
Right. Well, especially when you look at companies like Kraft Heinz, both of them were so innovative in their own way.
Right.
And so that is another example of the benefit of an M&A where you have two really forward-thinking organizations coming together. So instead of focusing just on operational efficiencies, they could also be focusing on, okay, well, how can we future-proof this combined organization, and we have these ideas on Kraft side, and we have these ideas on Heinz side, and let's bring it together and increase the power of our innovative engine.
I never wish ill will on anyone, but yeah. I actually, my hope is seeing how Kraft Heinz mm-hmm. has struggled, because mm-hmm. I think it's both have been great companies, as you pointed mm-hmm. out, massive mm-hmm. innovations. Mm-hmm. Seeing how that merger played out mm-hmm. will have future companies considering an M&A be smarter about what their focus is, mm-hmm. and in particular the zero-based budgeting that they pursued for Kraft Heinz, how that unfortunately may not have been the recipe for success.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, we will wish them luck. So as we move into the later part of our session, Jennifer, I'd love to hear, what is one future of work trend that you are most excited about when it comes to transforming the M&A world? What do you see happening that you think could really make a huge difference?
Selfishly, it is the focus on the mm-hmm. on the human capital piece. I think, mm-hmm. frankly, some of that has been driven by the war on talent.
Mm-hmm.
In the interviews that I did, it was interesting. The current generation, their loyalty to their company is nowhere near what it was
right.
in past generations. Mm-hmm. And what came through in the interviews, so granted, maybe a small sample set, I'd love your perspective, mm-hmm. but they saw their parents go through mergers and acquisitions mm-hmm. and restructures, mm-hmm. And they saw that the company wasn't necessarily loyal to their parents, and so they're mm-hmm. not going to make the same mistake. So loyalty
yep.
Isn't what it used to be.
And they're talking to their parents about it.
Oh,
and they're
absolutely.
Saying merger, acquisition, and the parents are like, get out.
Yeah.
I mean, they're listening.
It's fascinating to me how many I've talked to where mm-hmm. An older gentleman in particular said mm-hmm. his son, when he told his son that his company mm-hmm. was going through an M&A, his son mm-hmm. was like, Dad, get out of there.
You're like, so it's going in both
why
ways.
Are you, why are you even there? And yeah. now, other conversations where the father was equally like, don't mm-hmm. stick around. It's not going to play out well. So I'm combating the negative reputation of M&A, but it excites me that the focus on the talent and how to develop your talent, how to create an employee experience,
yeah,
right, that has your talent so excited to be working at your company that you can weather the transitions that are disruptive, like an M&A.
Yeah.
And I think that seeing that shift and that focus on how do I create such an exceptional employee experience mm-hmm. that through good times and bad, they want to be a part of this company. They see the opportunity. They recognize the potential of what role that they can play. And I think that's, clearly that's why I love what Silk Road does, because mm-hmm. that employee experience is going to be so critical. I focus on the disruptive mm-hmm. piece, but I have a view of the whole employee experience, and the more you can optimize each aspect of it, I think the greater chance you have for that younger generation talent mm-hmm. really sticking with the company.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the thing is a merger or an acquisition is an opportunity to look at your employee experience and create a new one that's even better.
Yes.
And sometimes organizations need to do that anyway, and they don't because they have no motive. But when you have this kind of consolidation, it's really an opportunity. So I would like to wrap up, Jennifer, by asking you where you think you're going to be in 2030. Where would you like to see your career evolve?
Okay, so you're going to laugh about this one. I had mm-hmm. to do an exercise 2 years ago that said, you know, write what your perfect day is. What are you doing 5 years from now? So this would be 2023. So I'm going to use that because I'm just going to assume that's going to be just a better version of 2023 and 2030. So I will be actively participating at the World Economic Forum in Davos and talking about the business benefits of having a humanity-focused business model. I also equally had envisioned that the U.S. President of the United States, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Will Smith, who would be the vice president, had asked me to lead a task force that brought together companies globally who really focused on humanity and humanitarian efforts to grow their business. So it could be either part of their product line or foundationally, but I was asked to lead a task force by Will Smith and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And because, let's see, I would have been asked to do that in 2023. So by 2030, we will have won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Wow.
For that. I think big. I think
you
big,
You do
Alexandra.
Think big, and that is fabulous. That's why we'd love to have you here.
And then I think the third thing that I had in mind was my book had been on the New York Times bestseller list for several years in a row. And my second book, which was Now What? How to Get a Job When Your Only Credential is Being Human, was going to be also on the New York Times bestseller list. So I've got now a second book by 2030. I'm leading task force, and apparently I'll be also winning the Nobel Peace Prize. So great things are ahead.
Great things are ahead. And we would like to thank Jennifer Fondrevet, and we will look for her book.
It's called Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Acquisition.
Great. And it's coming out in September, and we'll be sure to forward out all the information to our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on having such a wonderful platform now and wonderful ideas for how to use your humanity to be effective in the years to come.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.